Morning. Once upon a time, twin boys were conceived in the same womb. Weeks passed by and the twins developed. As their awareness grew, they laughed for joy. Isn't it great that we were conceived? Isn't it great to be alive? Together, the twins explored their world. When they found their mother's cord that gave them life, they sang for joy. How great is our mother's love that she shares her own life with us. As weeks stretched into months, the twins noticed how much each was changing. What does it mean? Asked the one. It means our stay in this world is drawn to an end, said the one. But I don't want to go, said the other one. I want to stay here always. We have no choice, said the other. But maybe there is life after birth. But how can there be, responded the one. We will shed our life cord, and how is life possible without it? Besides, we have seen evidence that others were here before us, and none of them have returned to tell us that there is life after birth. No, this is the end. And so the one fell into deep despair, saying, if conception ends in birth, what's the purpose of life in the womb? It's meaningless. Maybe there's no mother after all. But there has to be, protested the other. How else did we get here? How do we remain alive? Have you ever seen our mother, said the one? Maybe she lives only in our minds. Maybe we made her up because the idea makes us feel good. And so the last days in the womb were filled with questioning and fear. Finally, the moment of birth arrived. When the twins had passed from their world, they opened their eyes and they cried. For what they saw exceeded their fondest dreams. Obviously a parody against what man thinks about the life after death. Many times we've wondered, all of us have, I'm sure, about these things, about life after death and what it'll be like, if it's real. Some have even questioned, and probably more of us than would like to admit it, the actual existence of God, the existence and importance of doing what he says, of learning about him, etc. In John, the 5th chapter, in verse 24 and 25, it says, Jesus said, I say unto you that he that heareth my word and believeth on him that sent me hath, not is going to have, hath everlasting life, and shall not come into condemnation, but is passed from death into life. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the hour is coming, and now is, when the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and they that hear shall live. And we know that became true in Jesus' resurrection after the cross. We believe it will be true in our spiritual resurrection and physical resurrection. We are spiritually resurrected when we become one of his. In 2 Corinthians, the 5th chapter, in verse 17, it says, therefore, if any man be in Christ, he's a new creature. Old things are passed away. Behold, all things are become new. We're going to be spending our time in John this morning. In John, the 11th chapter and 12th chapter. Be flipping around a little bit. John, the 11th chapter, I've talked before about Mary. I've talked before about Martha. Now we're going to talk about Lazarus because he's a very unique individual. Very unique individual. Remember, there was Mary and Martha and Lazarus. The three people that it said that Jesus loved. As far as I know, there are only five, maybe six people that it ever says that Jesus loved differently than everybody else. There were his apostles, there were two or three of them that were closer to him, and Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. They were different. And Lazarus is a friend of Jesus. Now, this morning I'm going to ask you to be Lazarus, because I'm going to try to get inside his head and get you to get inside his head, of Lazarus and what's going on here. Lazarus is a friend of a man he believes to be the Son of God. Lazarus is a friend of a man who he knows has done miracles of astounding quantity and quality. Lazarus is a man who knows that Jesus has healed the sick and raised the dead. Lazarus is sick. Lazarus doesn't have an upset stomach. Lazarus is sick, and he's going to die. What do you do when you're sick and you're going to die? You call the doctor, unfortunately. You call the doctor. So what'd they do? They sent word to Jesus. They sent word to Jesus. Lazarus is sick. Do you think Lazarus didn't know they sent word to Jesus? Lazarus knew they sent word to Jesus. They sent word to Jesus. I'm sick. Come help. Come help. And Jesus got word, and what did he do? But he stood around and stalled for 2 days. No particular urgency. No particular hurry. Maybe a little concern, but certainly not moving in any direction. It wasn't that far. Bethany is just outside of Jerusalem. It's not that far. It wasn't like it was going to be a long trip. And finally, the apostles got to wondering about it, and he said, well, he's sick. He'll be okay. He'll be okay. He'd been dead for 4 days. 4 days. 4 days Jesus waited. And then Jesus decides he's going to go to where Bethany, where Mary and Martha still are. And Mary and Martha come to meet him. Oh, if you'd have been here, if you'd just made it on time. If you hadn't had some other calls, if you hadn't had other concerns, other worries, I'm sure you would have made it. No. No. And remember that Jesus went to the tomb and he wept. I'm going to read this in John 11 chapter, just a few verses between 33 and 44. When Jesus therefore saw her, Mary, weeping, and the Jews also weeping which came with her, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. He said, where have you laid him? They said to him, Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. Then said the Jews, behold how he loved him. And some of them said, could not this man, which opened the eyes of the blind, have caused that even this man should not have died? You have to wonder. Jesus, therefore, again groaning in himself, cometh to the grave. It was a cave, and a stone lay upon it. Jesus said, take ye away the stone. Martha, the sister of him that was dead, saith unto him, Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he hath been dead for 4 days. Jesus said unto her, said I not unto thee that if thou wouldst believe, thou shouldst see the glory of God? Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead was laid. Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me, and I knew that thou hearest me always. But because of the people which stand by, I said it, that they may believe that thou hast sent me. And when he had thus spoken, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And he that was dead came forth, bound hand and foot with grave clothes. His face was bound about with a napkin. Jesus saith unto them, loose him, and let him go. There are some things about the story of Lazarus that we can learn quite a bit from, especially if we try to put ourselves in Lazarus' shoes. The first is, if you want to escape the tomb, sometimes someone else has to roll away the stone in front that's burdening you. If a person wants to be saved, if they want to be resurrected, if they want to come back to life, sometimes they need some help. Sometimes they need someone else to help them. Look out, roll away the stone. Oh, but it's going to stink. It's going to stink. Yeah, it's going to stink. But some still require help to get the stone out of their way to become a Christian. Sometimes we maybe in our poor memories, or sometimes we, in our lack of thoughtfulness or just understanding, don't appreciate how big the stones can be. How big the stones can be that prevent people from becoming a Christian. We do not understand how much help they need to roll the rock out of the road to help them become a Christian. We need to help take away the stone. And he that was dead came forth, bound hand and foot with grave clothes. I don't know how he came forth. I don't know if he rolled out. I don't know how it worked. I do know that he was bound hand and foot, it says specifically. So he didn't just stroll out of the tomb. He came out somehow. I don't know if you're bound hand and foot, what do? Do you hop? I don't know. I knew he didn't come strolling out. Maybe leaping out, jumping out somehow. Bound hand and foot. And Jesus said, "Loose him and let him go." Now Lazarus is inside this thing. You're Lazarus. You've just been raised from the dead. You've just been raised from the dead. Do we get some perception sometimes because of pictures and the way we like to put stories together? Do you get some perception that somehow Lazarus was different than everybody else when he died? That when Lazarus died, he went in there, and then when they opened and they rolled the stone away, Lazarus came out, and he was bound, but he had all these fluffy, nice white clothes around him that were tying him up, and they took those off of him, and all was joy and wonder. No, he stunk. He stunk. He had dead men's clothes around him. His clothes, his dead men's clothes. Do you think he didn't deteriorate like anybody else in 4 days? You know why they have a funeral the same day in Israel that a person dies? Because the weather is not conducive to keeping a body in one shape. It falls apart. It stinks. Lazarus is inside this thing. He says, "Hey, I'm in here. I'm in here. It stinks in here. I'm in here. Get me out of here. I'm alive in here. Just because I've been resurrected doesn't mean that I'm loosed. I'm still entangled here. I'm still stinking. I still don't smell good." After people are raised spiritually, sometimes we still stink. We still stink. We still have things about our lives, etc., that are entangled, and they smell like the old one. We still stink. And sometimes we, who might be looking on, are a little leery to get close to somebody that smells like that. You stink. I'm not going to get close to you. You stink like a dead person. I was out hunting mushrooms and just walking through the timber. My timber, I know about where every little hole is in that whole timber. All of a sudden my sniffer says, "Something's dead out here." And it wasn't me. So I got to looking around, and it appeared that some possum had met an untimely death in some kind of battle. But I could tell that something was dead. And I didn't hunt mushrooms there. Because it stunk. I wasn't sure I wanted to eat the mushrooms if I found them. I don't know what possum mushrooms are like. But I didn't hunt mushrooms there. I don't like it. Do you think the people around Lazarus, just because this is a great event, they're astounded, everything else, you think their noses quit working? This man stunk. He stunk after he was raised. He stunk after he was raised. And so people, when they become Christians, doesn't mean that all the problems just went away. Sometimes those problems are still hanging on. The stench from them is still there. It's still there. And we have to help them be loosed. Sometimes there's a kind of a probationary period. You know, if a person, let's say a person was involved in addicted to drugs. They were addicted to drugs. And they somehow were converted and decided that wasn't the life for them and were baptized and became one of Christ. Did that life just doesn't matter anymore? All those circumstances, all those surroundings, they just went away? Just boom, just went away? They're still there. There's a period of time, where there's a probationary period, that they're being loosed. They're being loosed, and I'm not sure we ever get out of it. They're being loosed. You know, the church has been called a group of saints. I prefer to think of the church as a group of people who are sick and know it. A group of people who are sick and know it, and know where the doctor is. But I'm telling you this morning, there are people in this hospital that are in ICU, and there are people who are about ready to go home. And we're all in between. And I have to become comfortable if I want to help with people who still smell of their past life. So how discouraging is it to a person? How discouraging is it to a person when they accomplish this big thing, they turn themselves around spiritually, and then they find me leery of getting close to them? You're not like me. Your life's been nothing like mine. You've done all the things that I detest. It's a little bit like Vietnam veterans. Go to war, fight for your country, and come home, and no one likes you. No one wants to get close to you. So Lazarus can be raised, but he still has to be loosed. You be careful if you get involved with the riser, because they stink. They still stink. Hebrews the 12th chapter and 2nd verse says that God is author and finisher of our faith. There's a distance between that, authoring and finishing. Lazarus himself was trapped behind the bandages. He was trapped behind. He's shouting, "I'm not dead. It may smell like I'm dead. I may look like a dead person up, but I'm not dead. I'm in here. I'm very much alive. Very much alive." And we don't all recover at the same rate. In 2 Samuel, the 12th chapter, we have the story, kind of the tail end of the story of David and Bathsheba. I guess it's not the tail end, but two-thirds of the way through. Of David and Bathsheba. We know David has killed Bathsheba's husband because he's impregnated Bathsheba. And Nathan told David that his son was going to die. And David went and he fasted for 7 days, something like that. He fasted and prayed, didn't eat anything for 7 days. And finally they came to him and said, "Your child died. The infant died." His reaction kind of strikes us as odd sometimes, because he immediately got up and ate. Kind of put that aside. Okay, God made his decision. Now I'm going to go on. But if you go there, maybe I should go there. 2 Samuel 12. If you keep reading there a little bit, 19. When David saw that his servants whispered, David perceived that the child was dead. Therefore David said unto his servants, "Is the child dead?" And they said, "He's dead." Then David rose from the earth and washed and anointed himself and changed his apparel and came to the house of the Lord and worshiped. Then he came to his own house, and when he required, they set bread before him and he did eat. He went back to his life. Then said his servants unto him, "What thing is this that thou hast done? Thou didst fast and weep for the child while it was alive, but when the child was dead, thou didst rise and eat bread." And he said, while the child was yet alive, I fasted and wept, for I said, who can tell whether God will be gracious to me that the child may live? But now he is dead, wherefore should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he shall not return to me. Well, that's nice. Interesting story. And David comforted Bathsheba, his wife, and went in unto her and lay with her. She bare a son, and he called his name Solomon, and the Lord loved him. Bathsheba didn't recover at the same rate that Solomon did, or that David did. Bathsheba wasn't, she required comforting. David, kind of like men, you know, we put things in a little box and we shove it aside. David was able to do that. Bathsheba could not do that. She required David to go in and comfort her, console her. We don't all recover at the same rate. We don't all get well at the same rate. We can always be glad that we can change our clothes. And when the prodigal son came back, the first thing his dad did is got him a new robe. When blind Bartimaeus was cured of his blindness, he left his coat behind. I want you to think in Lazarus' place. Lazarus was sick. Okay, I'm sick. I'm really sick. In fact, I'm so sick I'm dying. And they call for my friend who can heal me. I don't know if I know he stalls or what, but he doesn't make it in time. Now, does my awareness quit there? What we know about living and dying, does my awareness quit there? I die. And then I'm resurrected. What would you do? How would you feel if you had been sick and you died and you smell the stench of your own body's decay and now you're resurrected? How would you feel and what would you do? Matthew 12. No, not 12. Not Matthew 12. John 12. Then Jesus, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, which had been dead, whom he raised from the dead. There they made him a supper. Martha served. Lazarus was one of those that sat at the table with him. One thing we learn is that from now on, if Jesus is in Bethany, Lazarus is there. Every time. Every time Jesus is in Bethany, Lazarus is mentioned as being there. Lazarus' priorities have changed. He could have become a sideshow. He really could have become a sideshow. How many people have you ever got to shake hands with who had been sick, died, deteriorated, raised from the dead? How many people have you ever got to shake hands with? That could have been quite a sideshow. Quite a sideshow. What would have happened today? Would you have been tempted to maybe go on 60 Minutes, tell people what it was like? That would have been interesting. I would have watched. Maybe you'd have hit the Letterman show. You know, they have race winners on there. They have Kentucky Derby winners on there. They have basketball champs on there. They have football champs on there. What about somebody that raised from the dead? Wouldn't that be an interesting interview, David? Yeah. Let's interview this person who came from the dead. None of that happened. None of that happened. But if I'm Lazarus, my priorities and my perceptions have all changed. Have all changed. If you've been dead, I wonder if colors look the same to you when you're raised. I wonder if colors look the same. Well, I suppose the frequency of light is the same, but I wonder if you look at them the same way. I wonder if you take a cold glass of water when your mouth's a little dry and you swish it around your mouth, if it feels the same to you after you've been in the grave for 4 days, as it did every time you did it all the days before you died. Your perceptions change. You're aware of things you were never aware of before in a different way. Even the very simplest of things becomes pleasurable to a once dead man. People who have met death head on and survived, their perceptions change. We have many people in our group here today who, for medical reasons, have come right up to things that could have cost them their lives and then were fortunate enough to have backed away. Your perceptions change. Things look different to you. Things look different if you react correctly. Hezekiah had an interesting thing. God came to him and said, I think it's time for you to die. Hezekiah says, I don't think I'm ready. This is my version. He says, I don't think I'm ready. Is there any chance we can get that reversed? Isaiah said, well, maybe. Maybe. Tell you what. I'll give you 15 more years. Hezekiah says, prove it. Isaiah says, well, we'll make the sun go forward 10 degrees or back 10 degrees. Your pick. Hezekiah says, I'll tell you, anybody can make it go forward. I don't know where he got that. But we'll make it go back, okay? We'll go back. 10 degrees. 10 degrees, if I figure right, is about 40 minutes. 40 minutes backwards, okay? And he did. And all done, Hezekiah lives another 15 years. Wouldn't you think he'd be grateful? Wouldn't you think he'd be happy? Well, the next thing you know, Hezekiah, somebody shows up from Babylon, and he has to show off everything. He forgets all about being restored, being given another 15 years. He's too busy showing off to the Babylonians everything that the Israelites had. Showing them off. The very people who were going to end up taking them all away from him, he showed it all off to them. He wasn't particularly concerned when Isaiah said, well, you know, the Babylonians are going to get all this, and your kingdom's going to go by the wayside. Oh, well, I'll be dead and gone. No concern at all. Perceptions didn't change. Sometimes people confront disaster, survive it, and just forget. They just walk away. It doesn't change anything. But the people who are really awake, like Christians are supposed to be spiritually, it changes everything when you're spiritually resurrected, doesn't it? It should change our perception. It should change how we see things. They should look different. It should change our priorities. Look in John 12 and 9. Much people, the Jews, therefore knew that he was there, and they came not for Jesus' sake. Then come see Jesus. What? Jesus is a man who heals the sick. He can walk on water. They did not come for Jesus' sake, but that they might see Lazarus also, whom he had raised from the dead. So if you wanted to find Jesus in Bethany, you look for Lazarus. He's going to be there. He's going to be there. Known fact, if you wanted to see Jesus, you look for Lazarus, because he's going to be there. He is going to be there because that's his priority. If ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Indians used to have a thing, you know. If you save a man's life, you had to be a servant. Had to be his servant. If a man saved your life, you had to be his servant. I might have got that twisted around the first time around. If a man saved your life, you had to be his servant until either he died or you somehow saved his life. Kind of got to be a trade-off. Whose turn is it? But you owed him. There's a sense of gratitude and priority changing when you're resurrected. I want to go back to John 12, the first two verses. Then Jesus, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, which had been dead, whom he raised from the dead. There they made him a supper, and Martha served. Sounds normal. There they made him a supper, and Martha served, but Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. Another translation used the word reclined at the table with him. He relaxed in his presence. You relax in the presence. I think I know people. I think I know Christians who never relax in the presence of God. They are so scared, so fearful, that they can't experience the joy of knowing this is the guy that raised me from the dead. I love him. I'm grateful to him. But I can relax in his presence. I can experience the joy of being saved. This is what we were designed for, is to be in his presence, to be happy in his presence. In Acts the 17th chapter, when Paul gave a speech on Mars Hill, in the middle of it, he says, "Hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on all the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation, that they should seek the Lord, if haply they might feel after him and find him, though he be not far from every one of us, for in him we live and move and have our being." We were designed to be with God, to worship God. We were designed to walk with God in the garden and talk with God in the garden and laugh with God in the garden and keep the garden for God. That's what we were designed for. I've heard many Christians never get to that point. We're still wandering around outside the garden, scared to death. Lazarus was able to relax in the presence of God. I want to be able to relax in the presence of God. God is not Allah. God is not Allah that can change his mind at a single moment and strike you dead because he doesn't like anything about you. That is not our God. I can relax in the presence of God. I can throw off anxieties. I can throw off frustrations. Tell me. Put yourself in Lazarus' head. Lazarus sitting there with Jesus, eating at the meal. Lazarus, what are you worried about? What are you worried about? I don't really know what Lazarus would worry about. Can you think of something Lazarus would be worried about? I can't think of anything Lazarus would be worried about. He's in the presence of God. He, above all else, knows what God can do. We need to celebrate what God has done for us today. Every day. Every day. We need to celebrate what God has done for us. Yeah, we need to repent. Yeah, we need to correct the things we need to. But we need to celebrate at the end of the day. At the end of the day, every day, we need to celebrate what God has done for us. That we can relax in his presence because I'm not responsible for those things anymore because Jesus paid for them. We can relax. It's a celebration. It was a good day because I finished it with God and I started it with God. Not because of what I did. I finished it with God. I started it with God. That makes it a good day. It's a good day. And then we can start living like men that have been loosed out of that stinky stuff. John 12:9. Much people of Jews therefore knew that he was there, and they came not for Jesus' sake only, but that they might see Lazarus also, whom he had raised from the dead. But the chief priests consulted that they might put Lazarus also to death, because that by reason of him, many of the Jews went away and believed on Jesus. So what are you going to do? How do you threaten a man who's already been there? How do you do that? He's already been sick and died and resurrected again. What are you going to threaten him with? You know, straighten up or I'll kill you. Oh, good, I'll come back again. He's been there, done that, seen that. How do you threaten? There's no intimidation involved here at all. Lazarus cannot be intimidated because he appreciates that he has been raised and they cannot take anything away from him. They've already tried through sickness. It can't do it. They can't do it. He's been there. He'd faced everything they had to offer. A person who takes Christ is a survivor. We've been there. Every day you need to appreciate that you've been there. You were dead. And you were stinky. And Jesus raised you. And he can do it again. He can do it again. We've all come out of tombs and calamities and problems and troubles, and we'll come out of many more. But there's no reason for us to be afraid, because we should have already experienced the fact that Jesus can take care of us. The people, therefore, that was with him when he called Lazarus out of his grave and raised him from the dead bear record. For this cause the people also met him, for that they heard they had done this miracle. The Pharisees therefore said among themselves, "Perceive ye how ye prevail nothing? Behold, the world is gone after him." And there were certain Greeks among them that came up to worship at the feast. The same came therefore to Philip, which was of Bethsaida of Galilee, and desired him, saying, "Sir, we would see Jesus." Lazarus is a very interesting man in the Bible. We don't have him, that I know of, ever saying anything. There's not one profound thing that Lazarus said. Not one verse I can memorize from this man that was raised from the dead. Not one sermon that he preached. Not one. Not one. And yet, look at the effect. People therefore were with him when he called Lazarus out of his grave, bear record. For this cause the people also met him, for they had heard they had done this miracle. Lazarus never preached a sermon. He participated in a funeral, but he never preached a sermon. Every time someone saw Lazarus, they had to think, "I wonder what it's like to be raised from the dead. I wonder what he feels like. Does he feel different than me? Does he think different than me? I wonder what he saw while he was dead." We'll have those movies and books, you know, heaven is real. All these things about trying to figure out if people can see things after death and those kinds of things. Well, this guy did. Didn't write the book. But he saw him. Every time you saw Lazarus, every single time you saw Lazarus, you thought, "That's a guy. Is that the guy? Yeah, that's a guy. That's a guy that Jesus raised from the dead. Wonder what he's like." And just his service to Jesus, just being there, just being there, made a difference to lots and lots of Jews, because Lazarus was there. He was living proof that Jesus was who he said he was. In Luke, the 22nd chapter, verse 31, Jesus tells Peter, "Simon, Simon, behold, Satan had desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. But I prayed for thee, that thy faith fail not, and when thou art converted, strengthen thy brethren." Satan wants you. Satan wants you. But you know what a loose man always does? He reaches back for those that are behind. When thou art converted, strengthen thy brother. Reach back for other people. That's what Jesus told Peter. And that's what Lazarus did, but not by speaking. That's what Lazarus did by living. Sometimes we like to take Christianity and we like to kind of carve it out, make it a part of our lives. Well, it's a part that's there all the time. It's not what you do, it's who you are. And so I always think it's important for a Christian. It's important how they walk and how they talk and how they look and what they do and how they work and how they laugh and how they cry. All of it's important because it's all part of Christianity. Because Christianity is not just a thing, not just a concept. It's who we're becoming, what we're becoming, more like Him. And by that, we preach every day without opening our mouths. Without opening our mouths at all. Just like Lazarus, just by being alive, converted who knows how many Jews. There's life after death. Lazarus proved it beyond a shadow of a doubt. No one doubted that Lazarus had been dead. They didn't have to just believe the story. They smelled the smell. He had been dead. And he was raised. And he walked around as a changed man every day so everyone could see God's power and what he could do for them. What he could do for them. I would love. My life is spent interviewing people. People think doctors do other things, but what we really do is interview people. My life is spent interviewing people and being a detective and trying to figure out what's going on. I would love, give me 30 minutes with Lazarus. Just give me 30 minutes. I would love to sit down with Lazarus, and I got a whole bunch of questions I want to ask him that I'm just curious as all get about. And so is everybody else. Because we all think, like the two twins, if there's life after birth. We all wonder at times, what's life like after death? Well, God will show us, and it'll be like the twins, and it'll be far above our expectations. Far above our expectations. God is capable of raising us all. We will offer the invitation this morning. As anyone has a need, we'll offer our assistance as we stand and sing the closing song.